You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right, welcome to the Beer Tour Guy Show, episode 330. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, owner-operator of Motor City Brew Tours, Detroit's original beer tour company. And I got two great local guests. When I say local, I'm like a town over. That's pretty local. We're here in the Podcast Detroit Studios in Royal Oak, but I got two gentlemen from Madison Heights. Why don't you guys introduce yourselves and we'll kick it off.
My name's Gary Marshall. I started homebrewing about 10 years ago, and like every homebrewer, immediately decided, I want to do this for a living. And then, you know, obviously was nowhere near that point, and then kind of grew into something over a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm Gordy Devingan, resident of Madison Heights, and I've been homebrewing for 5-6 years.
I like that, resident of Madison Heights.
Yep, I'm a local boy.
I thought you said president for something, like president?
No, they didn't have that on the ballot yesterday.
They didn't? No, you didn't win. You didn't win some election I didn't know about?
No,
okay.
No, but yeah, we were talking about commute, and I live less than a mile away from our brewery.
That is so handy.
Yep.
So how long guys known each other?
Well, we're in the homebrew club, the Kooning Guild of Brewers, the KGB. That's how we met.
Okay.
We were at, Minneapolis in 2017. Yep, 2017.
Oh, you're even wearing that shirt. Wow, isn't that, I didn't really know that by asking that question.
Just for reference.
Okay, yeah. That's pretty awesome.
And, we were, you know, talking about things that, you know, our futures and our, you know, homebrewing stuff. And, you know, Gordy had mentioned that he snuck into one of the pro seminars. And I was like, oh, why? You know, like, that's interesting. He's like, well, I wasn't really going to tell anyone, but I'm kind of thinking about, you know, opening up like a homebrew store, nano brewery. I'm like, really? I had that idea too. We should probably talk. And then, of course, we just kept talking as the drinks kept flowing and probably exposed too much info to each other, because at that point we were
how that works.
Competitors, yeah. You know, we had a few meetings after the conference, and kind of just came to the point where it was like, so should we just like do this together? Because we have the same vision, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do it separately. Gordy was a lot further along in his business plans. I was really just starting off. You know, I had an idea, that was pretty much it. So it kind of helped that he had more, you know, work done ahead of time. And then I think I had brewed a little bit longer. So we kind of.
So you've been brewing in the I'm going to keep saying this wrong. The KGB.
Yeah.
I know how to say it and I know what it is and I've been there, but okay, sorry. And so you've been brewing about how long, Gary?
I started homebrewing in 2010. My wife had actually bought me a homebrewing kit, and I think, and then like 2008, and I sat on it for a year, and then I went to open it up finally, and it was all bad. She gives me hell for this forever, because she says she got me started on homebrewing, even though she didn't. I didn't actually use her kit, but it got me the idea, and then I replaced it. I bought new stuff, and then it kind of just grew from a little, you know, dumb hobby. And then I just kept going, and I got to the point where I had done about 150 batches at home. And
oh,
so I have recipes for days.
So Gordy, how about yourself then? When did you start?
I had helped some buddies, probably right after high school.
Okay.
Some of their dumb little kits that didn't make very good.
So beer, a couple years ago you started.
It's 20 years now.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I can't guess age anymore.
But, so it wasn't really a hobby of mine. I just kind of assisted with the drinking of it. And then I moved out to Portland, Oregon in 2012.
So you're in the epicenter of it.
Pretty much.
Of beer.
I got a killer deal on a bunch of equipment that somebody was unloading. And I'm an engineer by training and by trade.
Okay.
And so I got into the details of it and the science and nitty gritty and went, you know, feet first into it. And became an obsession pretty quickly after that.
And then you guys collaborate at this homebrew conference, essentially, right? Or yep. Was it a competition?
It's both. It's Homebrew Con. It's okay. The national conference for homebrewers.
You can tell I'm not a homebrewer. Homebrew Con. I should know that. Makes sense.
Every hobby in the world has its own conference.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. We used to just call them conferences. Yeah. Now it's a con.
Cons,
right? It sounds cooler.
Yeah, it does sound cooler, doesn't it? I forgot what I was hearing on the news the other day, and they use con in the word. I'm like, con for that? What? You know, I don't get it. But there's a conference. This is funny. There's a conference for beer tour operators now.
Oh, no
which
kidding.
I've actually been to. Yeah, who would think, right? There's like, I don't know if you ever heard there's like the Beer Bloggers Conference.
Yeah, I have heard
this same company. I don't remember how, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, started doing one. It's like a beer tourism and marketing conference, essentially. I don't know, BCon, whatever. I don't know, BCCon. I don't know. I went to it like 2 years ago with a friend of mine in Lansing, the Beer Hound guy. I'm a Beer Hound guy, Paul.
Oh, yeah, I've heard
that. Yeah, and we went to that. We were out in Burlington, Vermont, and checked it out for the first time. And I'd never really been to that area, but the conference itself was in, you know, boring hotel, whatever. But it was hanging out with all the beer tour operators and hitting breweries that really was like the fun part. I mean, yes, we did classes and learned about search engine optimization and other crap that we don't want to talk about. But it was like meeting all these beer tour operators and like collaborating in that way. In the same way you would at a homebrew conference with other people that brew, or – you know, going to the Brewers Guild winter conference with all the brewery owners. It's all the same thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that's one of the cool things about the culture. I mean,
it really isn't it?
It's very inclusive.
People want to share.
Very much so, and that can become troublesome.
whether you're a little drunk giving your dreams and aspirations to someone.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Or not. But that's true, you know, and I get that a lot running my business in the same way, you know, that all the other brewery owners look at it. And that's – I don't know. I was scared at it at first, and then eventually I got over that.
How'd that happen?
I don't know.
I was going to say, I'm not there yet. I'm still in the scared phase.
Yeah, that's all right, because you guys are new. You know, you guys opened in the early spring.
We opened our homebrew shop in January.
January
and
was
the
homebrew.
Brewery was July.
July. Yeah, that's right. See, that's why I had the date in the middle. Okay.
Yep.
And yeah, so you're still new at it. Like, I'm 10 years in on my beer tour company, and I still wake up nervous. I have competitors now that have started in the last year here, right? And that stuff worries me. But I've also had success. So, like, I think as you breed more success, or as you sell more beer, cider, kombucha, right, wine, like as you get out of the red or whatever, you know, the financial situation is, you'll get more of that confidence, I think.
Sure. Sure.
And plus, you're the only brewery in Madison Heights. In fact, you're the first brewery in Madison Heights ever.
Ever, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I've read that. I'm like, ever. Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty small city, but there was definitely a market for it, especially, you know, with the unfortunate Sellerman's closing.
True.
I mean, there's still Royal Oak, and there's plenty of breweries in Royal Oak, and that's really close to here too. But yeah, I think there's a market. Any city that doesn't have a brewery, I think there's a market.
Yeah, and you got a busy area. You're in a strip center there off John R. That's a great location, I think.
Yeah, when we were initially in the planning phases.
Was that the first place that you looked at?
It was. And
Oh my God.
We did look at a lot of others, but yeah, that one ticked off all the boxes for what we were looking at. Did demographic studies and everything, and you know, with the homebrew shop being attached to the brewery, we wanted to be we want to capture as much of the market as possible because it is kind of a niche market, the homebrewing community.
I mean, there's a gap in where there would be homebrew supply shops between where Coonan's is and Warren, stuff in Shelby Township, I guess stuff on the west side in Livonia. I'm not an expert where every store is. Where would be – you guys are definitely an in-between location for that, wouldn't
exactly.
you be? And with a lot of people living around you that probably do it.
Royal Oak was a market for homebrewing that we were trying to capture because there is nothing in Royal Oak. And there was a lot of homebrewers in Royal Oak. People don't realize that.
There's
a Royal Oak Homebrew Club, and you know, and they've been by and large our most customer base.
So they were just running in the second you opened in January.
Pretty close, yeah. Although we still get people saying they didn't know they didn't know about us yet. So I don't know.
That means they're not trying.
We got to up our advertising, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we were looking for something. We wanted to be within 2 miles of 75 and 696.
Right.
So we catch the north, south, and east, west traffic, and we found the right spot.
Wow. Yeah. My friends live, they're within they're not a mile, but they're maybe within two. Yeah. So they were real excited. They were, I think you guys were at, you did some pop-up events and they went to one of those, maybe something even in Madison Heights. I couldn't tell you what it was. a charity event or something?
Yeah, it was pretty early on. It was in our strip mall.
It was just
a few doors down.
Oh, I didn't
know
that.
They had an empty
okay.
space, and they were doing like an art gallery
type
of thing. And they had asked us if we wanted to be the beer provider, and we're like, yeah, okay, we could make something work somehow, you know, so.
It was all homebrew at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Technically,
yeah. My friends, Pat and Amy, they were pretty excited though. She's texting me from it. She's like, "Here's a picture of the list." I'm like, "Okay, it's cool. You know, I'll see it when it's open."
Yeah.
But it was like that, you know, buzz of, "Hey, this is going to be by my house. This is sweet."
You could. Yeah, she was probably like, "I was here before they even opened," and you could have been like, "Well, I knew him way before he even had the idea to open a brewery." So
before he even knew you wanted one.
Yep.
Right. So the name Cadillac Straits. I love that name. What a
cool.
great name.
Thanks.
Do you get a lot of people asking you what it means?
We get a lot of people that think we're in Cadillac, and that's a little bit...
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's true.
So we always have to explain, no, not Cadillac the city. Cadillac, the founder of Detroit. And then Straits is the literal translation of the word Detroit from French.
Okay.
So we just kind of like a... It was like a nod to Detroit without having the word Detroit in our name, because we're not in Detroit. We didn't want to be those guys, you know, Detroit Brewing Company that's out in the suburbs. You know, everybody hates that.
You mean like that taco company place that uses that word in first name? See, I didn't totally say it that.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean fake. You didn't want to be fake.
We didn't want to be fake, you know. But we did want to kind of have a nod to the area. And, you know, to be honest with you, we had a spreadsheet. We had a list of available domains. So we're nixing things.
CadillacStraits.com. I mean, shit, that's easy.
Yeah, yep. It was a good one. So that was the one we kind of
settled on. So is that – and then you have the supply house, which is the homebrew supply
yep.
shop that's adjacent. I like how so that has kind of different hours from the brewery per se, right?
Yeah.
So because I was there on a Saturday night and that part was closed. I don't remember what time I was in. Maybe it was 8 o'clock at night.
Sure. We close at 7 most nights, the homebrew side.
Is it? Okay.
Just because, you know, it's more people. We'd have to staff it. Now, if somebody needed something desperately, we'd probably run over there and grab it for them.
I mean, you wouldn't want to become desperate.
Yeah.
So. Right. Yeah.
But at the same time, we don't want to staff that side. When
That makes sense.
Quite frankly, because it's one of us that would run the store. And if we've been there all day, we
you
don't
really want to go home eventually.
We do.
There's only so many hours in a week.
Yeah. I hear you. Well, your staff was great when I was in. I tried, I can't remember what flavor, but I had a kombucha. Actually, myself and my friend Pat did. We both, in fact, I think I had two. And then I had you have a hibiscus wit,
yep.
right?
Yep.
Yeah. I had that. That was really good. I know, my wife had one of the ciders.
Mm.
She really enjoyed that. She doesn't drink beer, so she was excited.
Oh, cool, yeah.
So was that all part of the plan then, was saying right out of the gate, we want the small winemaker's license, we want the brewing license.
Yeah, absolutely.
We want to be able to offer kind of all these options.
Yeah, because my mother-in-law doesn't drink beer. That's fair. You know, we don't
want her complaining at you.
Exactly.
About all this.
And, you know, people say, you know, it's like, I'm never going to judge anyone for what they drink. Maybe they have, you know, celiacs. Maybe they just don't care for beer. Maybe they, you know, maybe they don't really drink alcohol. So they just want a kombucha. So that's why we wanted to have the kombucha, you know, and, you know, I'm not going to lie and say that stuff's like our primary focus.
Sure.
Our primary focus is beer.
I get it.
And that's really just because that's what I'm best at. But
yeah.
But I like to make other things for people, because I never want a situation where someone can't bring their, you know, their partner or something because they don't drink what we have, and then they have to go somewhere else.
Well, I wish more breweries looked at it like that. It is a challenge. I have a wife who doesn't drink beer, and it's a challenge at certain places where she's like, all right, well, I'll just sit here.
Yeah, and a similar reason, that's also why we have food, because a lot of places – I can't tell you how many people came up to us after we told everyone we were going to have food, and they're like, oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad, because I can't justify bringing out, you know, my kids to a brewery that doesn't serve food, because then I have to try and bring in food for them too. And I'm like, yeah, I have kids too, and that's how I saw it, you know. I mean,
you kind of looked at it through your eyes.
Exactly.
Like, what would I want to be there?
Sure. Now,
I like that. Yeah.
You know, having food was extra complicated, so we had to work through it. But we have a really good chef, and he's kind of handled that. And it just, you know, it kind of came together that way.
I had a flatbread pizza. I like that. So you have like flatbread pizzas. What's you have? Wings, some salads, some appetizer
sandwiches.
Stuff.
Yep.
A couple
yep.
Sammies.
Yep.
Sammies. Well, I shouldn't say that. You know, I was complaining to someone that the menu said that the other day somewhere. Sammies instead of saying sandwiches. I'm like,
it was TGI Fridays.
It might as well be that, right? Because once they do it, then everyone starts copying stuff like that, because they're a big player. Anyway, who cares? So the food was great, and that was a nice compliment to everything in there. I definitely enjoyed that part of it.
And the chef has been awesome. I mean, he's really creative. He's got new specials every week. And
that's what's kind of nice about Flatbread. He can kind of be creative and throw different stuff on. I've seen you guys post some different things now. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been a lot of fun. And we get a little cutesy with those names too. But yeah, it's been fun and everything's run super smooth. So.
Well, you know, I guess the good thing was you did some kind of soft opening stuff. You did a few different events, sort of, before you were maybe officially open.
We had about a month of practice runs.
Yeah.
We were open, but didn't really tell anyone. We had just had a sign on the door. It says open 4 to 8, you know, so people kind of just drove by and figured it out. We had a very, very limited food menu to start, too, because we were all growing. We were trying to, you know, find our pain points. And after about a month of that, we just decided we had worked with the chamber to get a ribbon cutting date, and we decided that was going to be our grand open. So we like, okay, let's go. We're good.
Has the chamber been great to work with in Madison Heights? Do they have an active chamber there?
Yeah. It's shared with Hazel Park.
Oh, it is. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that. Now I'm a member of the Berkeley Chamber because I live in Berkeley, and they share theirs with Huntington Woods and the north part of Oak Park.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And they're pretty active, too. I've gotten kind of involved. In fact, I'm launching a podcast like next week with them. That'll be like a Berkeley Chamber podcast called Berkeley Local. Yeah. Free plug on my show for another show, right? Yeah. So you've enjoyed working with them. That was something that you kind of seeked out kind of right away.
Yeah, I don't remember if they found us or we found them, but yeah, it's been good. They were excited. Everyone's been super excited about us. So that's we like anyone who has an interest in us. So
well, you know, it's like a different draw for them that something else they can talk about when they're talking about Madison Heights now that they couldn't before. The other cities always could, right?
Sure.
And, you know, if Royal Oak brags about having all these breweries, whatever, and, you know, that's hip to say that, they couldn't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, we got this Mexican place down the road and a smoke shop and whatever, you know, all the normal stuff you would see in strip mall heaven. And now you're there.
Yeah. And Madison Heights as a whole has been phenomenal for us. They there was no fighting us. There was no issues.
They were ready. They said, okay.
Yeah. Everyone through and through from top to bottom has been helpful and excited for us. And like, we're in like their, like, you know, their vision of a downtown area someday, and I think that helps, you know, and we're excited to be there, you know. If it happens, you know, then it'll be good for everyone.
Yeah, when I first approached the city, just to see if they'd be interested in having us as a brewery in the city, I just told her what type of business it was going to be, and she said we were approved, jokingly, of course. But yeah, had a business plan already written and everything, so they were. They were happy to see that, and everything went very smoothly with working with them.
Wow. You know, I talk to lots of breweries when they start, and I just don't always hear it all that way. It'd be like,
no.
It'd be like the opposite of that. Like, it took 2 years longer than we thought it would, and, you know, the day we opened, we weren't sure if the city was going to shut us down.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
Exactly. I won't name cities, but there are certain cities around here that are the polar opposite of that.
Yeah.
And they'll fight you to the end of days because they have enough breweries already, or they just don't really understand it.
They don't get it.
They don't get it. Yeah. We're not just another party bar. You know, our hours are not. We don't even stay open that late.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I totally get it. Being someone who's also a biker, it's funny that I'm in a lot of these meetings with like trail groups that are developing rail trails that go through certain cities. And it's funny how some cities either get it and they understand the economic pull that's going to have of attracting bikers out there, and others don't. And I was just in a meeting at Drafting Table Brewing Company in Wixom.
Yeah.
And there are the trail that's going to be directly behind them is called the Michigan Airline Trail. And it's just about to do ribbon cutting like in the next couple of days. And that's kind of an extension trail that will link up other trails in other communities. So the Clinton River Trail, if you're familiar with that trail, West Bloomfield Trail, right? Go all the way up even to Witch's Hat with that trail.
Wow.
Well, the Michigan Airline Trail is kind of what's in between that. And I was in this meeting with the person that basically got that trail to happen, the coordinator. I'm not sure what his title is. Executive director, we'll say. It sounds cool. And really nice guy, John. And he worked with the Friends of the Clinton River Trail. And I've done charity bike rides with those guys and raised, you know, $10,000 for those guys and all kinds of fun. Anyway, the second he said this trail's open, he's like, we're going to do a bike and beer ride out of here then. Right? And it was so funny sitting there. It was like the brewery is just like, yep, whatever we got to do, let's make it happen. And it was like so easy.
They get it.
Yeah. Like it was no confusion. They understand that that will draw people, that that's going to be a benefit. Like that brewery is right in downtown and you just go down the sidewalk and now you're on this trail. So you could park behind there and then go to them afterward, you know, get pizza from the strip mall, do whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? They don't have food there, but they have a pizza place kind of a couple doors down. And it was so simple being in the meeting. Where I've been in other meetings like that where it'd be like, what do you want to do? Do we have to get cops to stop traffic? No, it's not like that. You know, what's this going to cost? You know, and all this crap. Where the owners were just like, all right, we're on. What's the date? What's the time? Okay, great. Yep. Yeah, whatever you need, I'm going to do.
And that's just having good vision, I think.
It is, isn't it? And that's really the big point of it at the end of the day. They you know, you don't. I don't want to sit there and have to hard sell everything.
Sure.
When I'm explaining, I want to bring people here and have them spend money, and it's good tax revenue. Like
exactly,
the city should understand that.
Yeah,
and that's what you're providing.
And you got to have the confidence to be able to adapt to new things because there's going to be bugs whenever you've got something new.
Oh, there's no way around that, right?
So just be willing to adapt to it and roll with the punches.
Now there's two of you, so that makes life a little easier.
It does, actually.
So when you wake up in a cold sweat, you're like, well, you know, Gordy can handle that then, I guess, right? No.
Yeah.
I had a partner when I started my business originally. I have to say it did help.
Yeah.
Now, he decided to move on to something else, but it was it's a scary thing, isn't it?
Oh,
kind of signing the paperwork, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. And well, I mean, we're in the same boat, so you know, go down in flames together or we make it together. And it is actually the ideal number too, because I think if we had a bunch of other people, then you're making decisions by committee. Here, it's a simple one-on-one discussion and come to an agreement.
Yeah, we had actually a third partner initially, and he dropped out. And I think as soon as that happened, things actually got moving a lot quicker.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't anyone's fault.
You could already see that because it's a third head.
It was bottleneck, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I have a partner. It's my wife. And I usually don't make a lot of decisions with my tour business without really talking to her. She's sort of my gut check. Or a friend at the bar who's sick of hearing me talk about it. You know, but I get it, right? Like, you really need someone else to be like, nah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. Or you meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And
sanity checks.
Yeah, totally, right? Like that's constructive conversation.
For sure.
That will benefit you guys for hopefully many, many years to come.
Oh. Yeah, well, it helps too that Gordy and I, our beer tastes are a lot different, so we kind of bring each other around. You know, Gordy likes like the more malty, simple styles, European styles, and that's actually good because I'm more of like the experimental IPAs, the more, you know, crazy styles. So that I think by bringing the two together, it actually helps us get a more robust offering overall.
I thought you had a balanced list.
Yeah.
And I don't always say that. I mean, I'm in a lot of breweries and I could tell you going to something like, what are you guys doing? You know, like 90% of these are hoppy.
Right. Four IPAs and something else. And that's it. It's like, well, that's not good. I half of my friends wouldn't even go there, you know?
Yep.
I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely learned that from running tours to breweries for 10 years is that there's so many different kinds of drinkers out there. Although it seems like at times the whole world wants to just talk about IPAs, but
sure,
that's not really true.
Yeah.
It is our best seller though.
Oh, I'm sure it is. And that usually is at like every brewery you go to now, and you got to be solid there, right? You got to be confident in the fact that you're going to rotate good things on the hoppy side, or, you know, there's going to be a huge percentage that's not going to dig you.
Yeah.
Where on the malty side, you can probably be a little more forgiving at times. And on the lighter side, that's kind of different. But what trends, I guess, are you guys seeing then in your for so many months here of what you're selling? Are you anything surprising you from what you've been selling?
Honestly, just the how fast the batches were going initially was hugely surprising. We have a pilot system. It's basically one half barrel keg is what you get out of it. And I thought, you know, initially that we would be able to keep those on for a while, but some of those pilot batches are gone in a weekend, and it's like it took me almost as long to brew it than it did to have people to drink it, and I'm like, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, you could start seeing that in your head, like, okay, that took me a lot of time, and I can't do that really
it's
fast.
Just not
typically
worth
they're
it.
Gone in 7 or 8 days. So yeah, if it's a special release, you're going to want to get there quick. If you see us post something new, come in and try it because it might not last long.
Yeah.
So that's definitely surprised you. Other things that have sold good that maybe weren't sure if that would or not.
Our Oktoberfest was really, really popular while it was on, and still is on, but it's nearing the end now. We actually had to do a surprise second batch of that, and I wasn't planning on it, but it just people were really digging it. I guess that was my another surprise then, is that people love seasonal stuff, which yeah. I guess makes sense. I just never really thought
I
about
do.
It that way.
I mean, I've been a seasonal drinker forever mm-hmm. now, and I love the fall time of year to do that. I mean, on the September and October beer tasting events I did on the Detroit Princess Riverboat, I had 8 different Oktoberfest beers, I think, out of my 40 choices.
Nice.
Which people are like, 8? What are you doing? I'm like, I guarantee we'll kill all of those first, and which is totally what happened.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, 3 of those were Germans and 5 were Americans.
Yeah, okay.
And then – so I kind of had that contrast of light versus, you know, a little more reddish brown kind of thing going. Mm. And what was yours? Where did you fall in that? Were you a lighter, more German-oriented style, or was it more Americanized where it was a little
I think
maltier,
it was
little...
like in the middle, a little bit towards the German side because okay. we used all German malt. We didn't use any caramel malt, which a lot of American styles have, and we used all German hops as well. So, I mean, it was kind of like an American spin on a German Oktoberfest, but it was a little bit darker than some of them, so
yeah. Okay,
but it was the Marzen style, so it
yeah.
was
yeah.
the amber color.
Okay, yeah. I gotcha. Yeah, interesting. I did a beer candy pairing on like Live in the D. Do you know that show on Channel 4?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Except you have jobs, so you're probably working then, right? That's like 10 to 11 a.m.
I've yeah. heard of it. I haven't
yeah.
seen it. Yeah,
yeah. I got to do like a beer candy pairing, and that's what I chose. What did I do? I did Griffin Claw's Fest, true Fest style beer. Mm. And then I did Rochester Mills, which is really more caramely
yes.
in it.
Yes.
And that worked really well for like peanut butter cups, Reese's peanut butter sure. cups. And I think the two hosts, Jason Carr and I forgot who else I had on there, and they were kind of surprised. Like, and they eat it and they're like, okay, yeah, that does really play well with it. And that was fun.
Cool.
But I'm amazed at how many more breweries are doing that now in the fall? That I'd say 5 years ago, I mean, yeah, people did it, but like everybody does that now. I think if you don't have that on in that time period, people are going to come in like disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, you're missing a huge opportunity if you don't have that.
And, you know, Oktoberfest styles are lagers. And we're right now, that's the new trend now, with even in the beer community is lagers. People are loving Pilsners.
Yeah.
Going back.
I've had a lot of great Pilsners lately.
Yeah. So we got one fermenting right now. It's nearing its end because I'm like, I like a good Pilsner too. I don't like them all, but I like, you know, some of them. So
sure.
That's why I kind of wanted to do one. So we've been kind of pumping out the lager styles just to kind of, you know, ride that wave, I guess, too. And maybe it's not a fad. Maybe it sticks around, and that's cool, too, you know?
Yep.
I think there's room for that stuff. There's room for good, crisp lagers and super, super, super sweet barley wines, too, you know? Why not?
You guys just put on some barley wines, didn't you? Wait, what did you guys post for Halloween? I'm trying to remember.
We
now.
Did Monster Cereal
Oh, I'm
beers.
Sorry. Monster Cereal Beers, not barley.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, those were wild. The pictures, the colors look
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
Like it was like Kool-Aid going nuts on your beer.
So back,
they yeah. look like fun.
Back on the homebrew days, one of my close friends, Mitch, he did a stout Chocula. So it was basically just a stout with Count Chocula cereal. And it was kind of fun. Everyone kind of liked it. And I asked him, I was like, hey, you know, can I take your idea and make it bigger on the homebrew or on the production side and then, you know, do other ones too? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I kind of paired a cereal with a beer style for each of them, and I think it was fun. I don't think the beers came through entirely as the cereals. Like I don't think you got a lot of berry characteristics from the Frankenberry or the Booberry. So I think next year I'll probably add the fruits as well to kind of complement that. But I think
seems like that'd be the hardest part of it.
It was, yeah. I think it was fun though. It, you know, a lot of times doing this stuff is just fun little experiments to do, and they all sold out or close to it. I think we just have the blueberry one left. So
okay,
yeah.
And not much of it.
Not yeah.
Yeah, Halloween's become also like kind of in addition to just Oktoberfest itself. Now you got Halloween, and a lot of breweries seem to be doing stuff with Halloween.
Yeah,
we do good around that time frame too. I definitely fill up tours around then, and people are just like show up in costumes.
Yeah,
even if it's not Halloween itself, it's that weekend around there. I'm always surprised by that, even though I didn't say it was like a costume theme bus or walking tour, but people show up that way. And
yeah, that seems like that's another trend we're seeing now, is just people getting more into the holidays that are
around now.
So Halloween's becoming a whole October thing.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously now, of course, is the season of Christmas. So I think at that point, you know, you just kind of
– You just jump right the second it's done, you're on right. to holidays, aren't you?
I mean, I'm not putting my Christmas beer on right now, but – Probably not too far off.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I'm already drinking like brown ales, and I'm sure some spice is going to roll into that soon enough, mm-hmm. right?
And we're starting to see a lot of the darker beers are going faster now. And from the homebrew side too, the homebrewers are making their stouts and porters. We ran out of stout yeast the other day.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And we got new stuff in stock immediately. But yeah.
Of course you did.
There was a run on it, and we weren't expecting that so soon in the season. So
that's been kind of hard too, is on the homebrew side. Neither of us have ever like run a retail store, so
just yeah, you've purchased
keeping
but
stock
run.
And with yeast it's tricky because you can't stock too much because it has a shelf life. So
right,
we did our first free yeast day a couple months ago because we had a few yeast that were just out of the date, and I felt guilty selling them to people even at a discount. So we basically just said, you know what, just come on in, you know, help yourself to free expired yeast. It's probably still good, or if it's not, you can make it good just by kind of re-energizing it. So people liked it, I think. So kind of just, you know, getting used to that process, buying ingredients and keeping stuff in stock, not running out, but not stocking too much.
I mean, not only are you running a brewery, you're trying to remember the home brewers at the same time. Yeah, exactly. I would say that's tricky. And I guess from being a member of the Kunin Guild, and their shop that's been there for years.
Yeah.
Did that help? Did you talk with them about all this? Was there some, advice given from them?
You know, we got some little bit of information to start, and we kind of got some insight from them. The Kunin brothers have been in a few times. They've bought some stuff from us. They've had some of our beer. So, yeah, we're definitely in good terms with all of them. There's no real competition in this market, either breweries or supply stores.
They're established too, so it's not like you're out there being like, I'm sick of you and I'm doing this. It's not like that.
Nope.
Right?
We're all in it together.
Yeah.
So if we have to pick any enemy, it's the big beers, I guess, you know.
Sure. Totally, right? And I'm not saying you have to do that either. We're not that show. Nope. Right?
No. But as far as competition goes, you know, the craft beer market's big and growing, but compared to, you know, Bud Miller and, you know, it's a drop in the bucket, and that's our true competition. We're just trying to chisel out a little more of our market. You know?
I think the opportunity is people in Madison Heights that never went to breweries before, you know, mm-hmm. just very close, you know. I mean, people in Royal Oak already do that, and it's cool if you're pulling them over at times. But I'd say in Madison Heights, you could probably have a lot of – I mean, are you noticing that? Are you noticing folks that maybe never really went to breweries that are coming in since they never had access to it?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's got to be satisfying.
Yeah, for sure.
Exposing them in this
being
way.
Able to kind of guide them along and like, hey, I'm just a Bud Light drinker.
Yeah, what can
what
I
got
drink?
For me? Like, okay, well, we have a couple options. So you try to give them like something that's close and then maybe a few things that are a little farther away just to see. I know a lot of people – don't realize, like, for example, our New England IPA Aurora is a lot easier to drink than people realize for an IPA, you know, because it's a lot of late addition hops, so it's more of the hop flavor without the bitterness. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, I could drink that, you know.
Yeah, I think that style in general surprises people if they don't know better.
Yes.
Exactly.
And they just see IPA on the name. And I get it a lot. I try to serve it on tours where I think the brewery has a good interpretation of it and try to pull them, oh, I don't drink hoppy beer. Well, try this.
Yeah.
You know? Just don't look at what you just saw for the name.
Right. They're thinking West Coast IPA, you know, total bitter bomb. And there's space for that too. But IPA doesn't necessarily have to mean it's going to be super bitter.
Yeah, very true. So I've been staring at the six-pack container you got here. What do you got going on in there?
Sure. So this beer was canned about 5 minutes before I left.
No, I don't know if that's fresh enough. Okay.
So I was kegging today before we
came. And it was kegged about an hour prior to that. So.
Okay, that's
so
pretty
four
awesome.
4 hours ago, this was in the fermenter still. This is called Tough Eddie. It's I'm not going to call it our flagship beer because I don't think we have a flagship yet, but it's one of our first beers and overall one of our best sellers. It's a all citra I call it a Midwest IPA because it's not necessarily any other style. It's not really a New England. It's not really a West Coast. It's just, I don't know. It's just a good all around.
I'll go with that. Midwest IPA. Okay.
We're making a new style.
Why not? You can make whatever you want. That's what I say. Thank you.
And cool. This it features Citra hops through and through, and Citra is one of the best hops in my opinion. So
it sure seems like it's oh yeah, I can tell that. Oh wow, I really like that. That's good. Very smooth. Yeah, I could pick up the Citra right away.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it doesn't get any fresher than that.
Boy, that is fresh. I mean, man, I don't think I've had one this fresh in a while quite like this.
It's a beer that when we run out of it, I have to hear about it. So I figure I should probably keep it on.
It's been on for a couple
both from our customers and our staff.
So I didn't do any to-go beer when I was in because I just wasn't in that mode. So I didn't pay attention. Are you just canning stuff to go, or how are you doing that in there?
We'll do any format vessel that you want to take. We do growlers. We do 16, 32, and 64-ounce growlers, and then we do cans. But to be honest with you, we kind of – push the cans just because I think they're better overall.
Yeah, totally.
If you want a growler, sure. But I think the cans are better because they don't let in light, they don't let in oxygen, and they're, you know, it's just a smaller size too.
More portable. You know, yeah. Being made out of glass too.
I have to admit, if I do beer to go now, I'm trying to do cans. Most of the beer I think I'm drinking at home for home use is canned now. And that's a great trend. It's funny, even the beer tasting events I've been doing on the boat that I did all this year, I'd say 80% of the beer I served on the boat was canned. Mm. It just made it so much easier. I could serve more that way as opposed to bottles. Just everything was easier that way. I think I'm glad that that's what's happened in the industry. I'm glad that, you know, smaller breweries like yourself have a means to do it that way too. On site and get something this fresh to take home. And like, I have a wife who doesn't drink beer. So for me, getting 64 ounces of something really doesn't work for me that often.
True.
I really don't want that.
Yeah. You don't want to waste it.
No. And for years, that's the only way you could really do it. And then eventually we woke up and, you know, Oscar Blues and all the innovations that eventually spread all the way down to your level here of where you can, you know, get a machine to do that. That's great.
Yeah. I literally tried to downsell somebody the other day and my wife was like, why did you do that? And I'm like, because he wanted a growler. And I'm like, are you sure? And we have 64, we have 32. And he's like, you know, I'll take a full size. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I just want to make sure that you were, you know, you knew we had the options because, you know.
So you guys have a, what you call an Explorers Club, right? Or Explorers Guild. I'm sorry, Explorers Guild. I just said it wrong. But that's your mug club, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Like that name, the play on Mr. Antoine Cadillac there.
There you go.
So 15% off beverages, $60 a year, $40 to renew each year, or $300 lifetime essentially. That's a nice price point. Pretty kind of standard for that. Have you found you've got a lot of takers?
Yeah, absolutely.
You did a lot of pre-sales, which I thought was clever and cool that you were out there doing that ahead of time before you opened.
That was like our Kickstarter, kind of our way to raise money ahead of time.
Without giving money to Kickstarter, you did that. You know what I mean? Which is even smarter. I appreciate it.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't even say Kickstarter, but yeah, since we didn't use them. But yeah. So it was like our fundraiser. We've had good success. We wanted to do a mug club, but not with mugs from a couple of reasons. A, Gordy and I just did not want to store the mugs.
We don't have room.
And then I don't know. For me, I've actually turned down a few mug clubs because I don't actually want the mug size. I want to get a discount, but what if I want a flight? I'm not getting any kind of discount on a flight then. So we were like, why don't we just do like a mugless mug club where we just give a percentage off and, you know, people still feel like they're part of something.
Sure.
And yeah, it's been good so far.
And not knocking the places that have.
Yeah,
have the
totally, right?
I mean, that's cool. But, you know, for me, you know, some of these places have the really cool kind of opaque clay.
Sure.
Know, glazed mugs. But you can't see the beer. Now, for most people, maybe that doesn't matter, but I want to see the beer.
I want to hold it up. That's your concept for it. I like that, though. Yeah. That makes sense. And I have to say, anywhere I'm a mug club at, I almost never get samples then because I'm like, I'm getting my 20-ouncer or whatever. And this is just straight up. I guess I didn't even think about that when I looked at it. It just said 15% off beverages. So, okay, that's everything.
Yeah. And that was the other thing, too. I mean, you know, if
you're not excluding just beer people.
Or if we've got something that's 14%, we don't want to be serving that in a larger size.
So true.
You know
and I've been to places where they do that, and I'm always like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know.
And then you're done, you know, you have one beer and you're gone because you can't have any more.
So you don't get them there for that long. You actually probably make less money from them in that respect too.
Yeah.
From a business standpoint, right?
Yes,
they're eating right away.
And right. I guess, you know, when we first opened, it probably didn't matter because we only had a couple of beers on tap. But now we do have 10, 12 beers on tap.
Yeah, you had a nice list in. Like I said, I think it was a month ago when I was in for the second time. And, I enjoyed having all the options like that. I think that's the hardest thing when you start out is kind of ramping that up and kind of getting rotation and trying to figure out what's kind of – working and what you can experiment, especially because you homebrewed for a lot of years. You had a lot of recipes. You've got tons of stuff you can do. It's not like you don't have recipes.
Right.
Yeah.
When we started, we had a full tap list, but everything was in pilot batch size. And then we were very close to running out of beer. I think one day we had two beers on tap. Not our best moment.
No.
Well, but everyone, you know, people go through that. So.
Yeah.
A year from now, I'd be laughing about that. I'd be like, remember that time we almost ran out of beer?
Yep.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could tell stories. There's all kinds of breweries that have been through it way worse. Where I remember Bad Brewing in Mason. You ever been to Bad Brewing?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. He had a really small system. I can't remember what it was. I don't even think it was 3-barrel. Hmm. And I remember I was in there with Paul Starr, and he wasn't the brewer wasn't open yet, Brian. And I'm like, is this really the system that you're going to go with here? You know, I'm like, I get that it's downtown Mason. It's not a big city, but it's like, oh, yeah, this will be fine. And sure enough, like they open and then like a week later they close for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then he quickly realized he had to buy a bigger system and all that. And, you know, now they're rocking and they do great beer and they do some really cool where they close down the streets there because it's a small town and do these block party events a couple times a year with barrel age things and whatever. He figured it out.
Yeah.
But I remember that conversation. He goes, well, I did this calculation and it said, like, if I sold blank pints, you know, the calculations you guys have probably done yourselves.
And, oh, yeah.
He goes, this will be fine. And then, no, you know, it's like totally blew that out, which is a good thing.
We did all the calculations and then threw them all out the window.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are hard things to figure out.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you just make the best assumptions that you can and
all you can
get
do.
The best information you can from other brewers. You know, you want to learn from other people's mistakes before you make your own. And I think we did a pretty good job of that, but we certainly paved the way for our own mistakes as well.
But that's how you get better.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So if I knew what I, you know, what I know now about running a tour business, I definitely didn't know when I first started.
Yeah.
I mean, such simple little things that you'd pick up on. How you communicate with customers.
Yeah.
I'm sure that'll continue to evolve. How you communicate through social. How you communicate on your website. Right? How you answer questions, things like that. Like all those things I do like totally differently than when I first started. Like my frequently asked questions section, you know, it's something like you're always kind of tweaking that for your business.
We should have one of those.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying it to critique you or anything.
No, I'm just
saying like
it just planted a seed.
But you know, what a lot of it is just customers will help you dictate that
because
they'll come in and ask you stuff and be like, wow, I guess that probably isn't clear.
Yep.
You know, I need to make that clear. So let's figure that out. So how can we make it clear, right? Is it something on our menu? Is it something when they walk in they don't get? Is it something on our website or social that we could fix?
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
All those things, you know, I constantly tweak it. I constantly try to make things simpler, honestly. I think your presentation is pretty simple in the way you do it, and I do appreciate that. I definitely go onto some breweries' websites where it really says nothing, and I don't get that, you know, like if I can't find the hours, like within 2 seconds, like of when you're open on your website, like that's a problem,
you know,
or your email address or phone number, or I don't know, maybe your Facebook link or something. Like some of these places, websites, you go on there and just like, where is this? What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh? Are you still open? You know, it shouldn't be that way. Like that's kind of the simple stuff to do. I think you guys have been doing a good job of updating.
Yeah. I was a website software developer before I did this. So I kind of went into it as if I was a consumer, what do I want to see right away? Yep. So
like it was probably the least amount of research I needed to do because I grabbed it all really fast off your site. Where others I might have to find articles written and other things like that.
Yeah.
I really didn't need to do that. Right. You kind of had that all answered on there right away.
Good.
So you have some special events that you guys have been kind of doing. You got like a board game night or board game day, I guess you do on Sundays, right? You've been doing, I see a homebrew open house coming up in November. 18th?
Yeah, we're doing that every third Monday of the month.
Okay, third Monday of the month. Okay.
So typically on Mondays we're closed, but the brewery and the homebrew shop. And so we're not actually going to have – we're not going to be the home store for a homebrew club. But we wanted to have an opportunity for all our customers to get together and share some of their home brews and tips and tricks and maybe grab a couple beers too while they're at it. So we're basically having a monthly homebrew club meeting without us being the club. So we've got guys from all different clubs, Motor City Mashers, the KGB, throw out a couple others.
Well, you said there's a Royal Oak Club.
Yeah. The Royal Oak Club was actually one of our targets because they don't have a lot of, they don't do a whole lot in terms of outside activities just because I think they're kind of smaller and they just like to, you know.
I'm not even that familiar with them, honestly. Yeah, like, I know they exist.
They're under the radar. I think they meet at River Rouge and maybe Urban Rest once
in a while. Oh, that's right. They meet at River Rouge once in a while. That's true. Okay. Interesting. So has that been working well? You'd like it? Getting a kind of a pulse of what's going on with homebrewers that way?
Yeah, we just had one so far.
Oh, right? So you've just started that. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, but it was a great turnout. Everybody loved it and great feedback, and I expect that to be a pretty good draw, you know, once a month.
Why wouldn't it, right?
Yeah.
Cool place to come and hang out. That's what everyone wants to do.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, the homebrewers are some of the most, you know, innovative bunch you'll ever meet, you know, and I think it helps with getting ideas and taking a pulse on what's popular and what's trending and just, you know, bouncing ideas. I always want to keep going to my homebrew club meetings because I think, you know, it just gets you like connected still. This is the Oktoberfest that we're drinking
now. Okay. I was trying to grab it so I could say that. Ah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's right on. And I see why you had to do a surprise second batch. Yeah,
we've gotten some very high praise on this one. And recently we just had to expand our system. We have a 3.5-barrel system.
Okay.
is our big production system. And we were having difficulty keeping up with the demand and getting the variety on tap as well. So we recently procured a 7-barrel fermenter. So that he can do double batches on it.
And, okay.
Next year, this will be made on the big.
Was that somewhere locally? Are you able to talk about where you got it from? Or
the tank? Actually, no. This one we got. I'll start with where our main system's from, and that's Psycho Brew out of Greenville, Michigan. And
yeah.
So Chris
thought that's
Chris
what you
actually
had.
Brought it over on his own stuff, and he was real awesome. We were looking to source a 7-barrel tank, and it wasn't as much the pricing, just as the timeline. He had a, I think, 11-week turnaround or something, and they were
behind on getting us critical components that they needed, and we needed it immediately.
Right. So we looked elsewhere, and this was just a company outside out of California that just was able to get us on an existing delivery that was coming out here, and the price was good. So we just jumped on it.
Yeah. And there are breweries in Michigan using the same system, and they were happy with it. So we decided to pull the
trigger. Okay, so you felt confident who the provider was then.
And like you said, the Tough Eddie that you just tried, that was the first batch off that new
vessel.
First double batch.
And awesome.
It went well.
And that's like 7.3%. No joke.
Yep.
Clean. I like that. Okay.
And that's another thing that we're trying to keep balanced too is the alcohol by volume. You know, there's a lot of big beers out there and we're I don't want to say guilty of that too, because I don't think it's a bad thing.
I think a lot of homebrewers are guilty of that. And I think that just comes from your homebrewing and tinkering and you'd like to rev it up. I get it.
Sure. But and it's appropriate for a lot of styles in craft beer. And, you know, I think we've done a good job with that. But we also do have some things that are lower ABV for people who want to be able to sample more things.
I feel that's definitely the trend. As you were talking about lagers before, I definitely have seen many more breweries offering stuff in that 4-5% range that I'd say a few years ago that was few and far between.
Session IPAs and things
like that. Very much so. Sure. Right? Yeah. And I think that's a good thing. I'd say, you know, as a beer tour operator, someone who has to day drink for a living, right? I definitely drink that way. So like I'm glad I had, because it used to be like, oh, I just got one choice, you know? And now I can do lots of things that way. And that's been fun. And definitely even at beer festivals, I've started to see it. Because it used to be then you'd go to beer festivals and then you'd never see that at a beer festival. And you'd just be ripped because you were sampling all day on high ABV. And
so 14s and 15s.
Yeah. And your head's kind of spinning a little bit, right? And now there's a little more variety. And maybe take some of that to be the whole kettle sour craze that's going on right now for sure on the sour side. That has caught me by surprise, I think, a little bit. I guess I didn't expect so many breweries would start playing with like kettle sour, Gozas, and the likes, Brillner Vices. Are those styles that you guys have done much with yet? Are you thinking you would?
Yeah, we definitely 100% will. They're slightly more complicated to make than your normal beer,
yeah,
so
definitely.
I just haven't had time to dabble yet, but I know the people want it. So I would say in the next 6 months, I'll definitely do some kind of Berliner, fruited Berliner probably.
When I was down south, I was in Florida in April on vacation. Every brewery I went to had a Berliner. Well, they call it like a Florida.
Florida Weiss, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't really. Yeah, it was the first time.
With that one.
Yeah, I wasn't either. I felt, I don't know, I was surprised. I didn't know that, you know, but I was down in St. Petersburg, St. Pete Beach area, and every single brewery had it.
It's Florida. I think they're just making stuff up.
I know. I'm like, what? So there's a Berliner Weiss. I'm like, no, it's a, I'm like, no, it's a Berliner Weiss. Like, don't, you know, I know what I'm talking about.
New name
about.
For your first Berliner Weiss, call it Florida Man.
Yeah. Florida Man. There we go. See, that's a good name.
Then we get to dig at Florida too.
Yeah.
You know, some of those places were rocking them at like 3.5%.
Wow.
And that was wild. And was, you know, I was on vacation and we were kind of brewery hopping a little bit on a few of those days. And I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
You know,
it just goes to show you don't have to ramp up the alcohol to get big flavor.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Which is cool.
Definitely in a style like that, you don't. I don't think.
Right. Now, again, it's appropriate to have high alcohol in some things too. I mean.
Oh, totally. Don't get me wrong. I'm in winter season and I want some bourbon barrel aged stouts now. So.
He's got an Imperial Stout in the fermenter right now.
Yeah. Now that we actually have we're kind of caught up on beer, I was able to let something ferment a little longer. So we decided to do an Imperial Stout finally. So it can sit in the fermenter for a little while. I got to figure out if I'm going to barrel age it or what. Eventually, yes, absolutely, we'll be barrel aging some stouts. But for now, I don't know. I might just stick some oak spirals in there and call it a day. We're going to experiment a little bit. We're in that phase where no one's expecting anything of us yet, so we can play around.
It's not just like you got 5 years of history of a bourbon barrel-aged stout that you have to have on at a certain time of the year, or like the world's going to end. It's not like that, right? You got a little more freedom still.
Not yet.
So
I'm looking forward to when we do have that. That's a good problem to have too, though.
Yeah. Oh, totally, right? All those are good problems that you'll get to that point for sure. So let's see. You guys in October did do a festival, didn't you?
We did. It was an Oktoberfest at St. Something Church.
Yeah, it was up in Whately.
It was
a church. We had our chef had a connection to the organization that was hosting it, and I wasn't going to do any festivals this soon, but they really, really wanted us to be there. So I was like, okay, this might be a good first fest. You know, we can give it a shot and go from there. And they provided the equipment too. So, and it worked really well. And I think it made us realize that, we can do this. We just got to make sure that we both cannot be at the brewery, you know. So with staffing, we just have to make sure we can cover it. But
yeah, I think you'll just work that out after you do a couple, right? Yep. You get through a couple of like the bigger guild ones, and you're like, all right, the world didn't end. I was able to provide enough beer.
Yep.
People were still there.
Yeah.
And as of, I think, 2 weeks ago, we're finally official guild members now.
You are. So congratulations.
Thank you.
That's great.
So now our first option will be to go to the winter festival in Grand Rapids. And now that they cut the day off, they cut Friday off, so it's just Saturday. So
that makes it more viable.
It does make it more viable. Yeah. I'll be honest with you, for us, because it's a little bit less of a commitment from both time and just resources in general.
Yep.
So I think this year we'll probably try to do most of the festivals. I don't know for sure, but I definitely probably the Traverse City one. That's going to be fun.
They just added.
Yeah.
That'll be in May.
That's awesome.
I'm excited about that one.
Yeah, that's a good time of year to kind of kick into it.
Yeah.
I know I must have had 2 dozen people ask me if I was going to run a bus to that. I'm like, that's too far to do in a day, though.
Yeah.
So, and honestly, like, we're already committed on that weekend. That's a busy weekend there.
Yep.
That's what I think it's like May 16th, 15th, somewhere in there. And that's a busy time as the year.
Yeah, it's the World Expo of Beer too, which is a shame that they picked that. I know they said they had scheduling issues, they couldn't avoid it. Because I had thought about that'd be cool to do the World Expo also, but we can't do both. So,
yeah, I mean, the breweries that do both are even those breweries will say, yeah, it gets a spread a little too thin. Mm-hmm. You can spread out the beer, they usually got to be a little larger to be able to do it that way, but. I'm always amazed when I see smaller breweries and they're at two places at the same time and they're still open as a business. And I'm like, that's not easy to do. So
yeah, and there's no need to stretch ourselves too thin.
No. You want to have
it's
it
not
fun.
Supposed to be that stressful.
Yeah. You want to have fun, and I mean you're focused on your immediate area, and that should be your focus.
Yeah.
Right? You're not you don't need to open up a distribution center and start popping cans out in the market or any of that kind of stuff at this stage, right? You got to focus on what you're already doing, which is making great, great beer and everything else.
Yeah, draft is king. So we want to sell as much as we can out of our.
That's where you're going to make the most money.
That's our model. I mean, really. I mean, we're planning on getting on tap at some local bars pretty soon.
Sure.
And you know, I think we've gotten to the point where we've got the capacity to do that, but it'll be a limited number of bars at first, and then you know, maybe, you know, Amore's in Madison Heights, you know, a couple very local liquor stores where we could have, you know, a couple four packs or something like that. But we're not looking to be on every grocery store shelf anytime soon.
And really, that part of the market's become so crazy and competitive that would you want to be?
Honestly, you know? No. I mean, that it is not in our business plan to ever get to that point.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, I don't know what our future 10 years down the line is going to look like, but I don't see that as part of our model. What do we got here?
This is Aurora, our newest New England IPA.
Newest New England IPA.
The previous one we had done was called Hop Shower because I had gotten sprayed in the face with hop.
Oh, my God. Sorry that happened to you, but that is a funny name.
Yeah, it was a pilot batch. I was doing it in my garage. My garage to this day still has hops on the ceiling. I haven't gotten around to washing it.
That's on the honey-do list, doesn't it?
Yeah, my wife was not thrilled about it. She's like, all right, I'll clean it up. And I'm like, yeah, I know.
Oh, this is great, too. And back to what you were saying about, you know, not being bitter. I mean, this really is not bitter when you drink it, right? It's got a nice flavor to it. I really like it.
And this one, you did change the hops from Hop Shower. You've got Simcoe in this one, right?
Correct. Yeah. We used – for this beer, it's Citra, Mosaic, and Simcoe.
Okay.
Which are all good you know, hops for that type of beer. The previous batch, instead of Simcoe, was Mandarina Bavaria, which is another good one too. So
I'm not real familiar with that one.
It's not widely used, but it's actually been a great seller in the homebrew shop too.
Oh, has it? Okay.
Yeah. Anybody who wants to really get that kind of tangerine punch, it's a great hop for it, especially in this.
I could see that for this style. That does make sense to me.
Although he's got some a new one coming out soon, a new version of the New England IPA.
Yeah,
this has been your style. You've been definitely tweaking.
Yeah, well, you know, again, we're new. We have a chance to kind of come out with some random things that people don't expect. I mean, you know, we've already kind of established that Tough Eddie's pretty good and that people like it, and that's cool. So that'll be Tough Eddie. But now I get to play around with new stuff at this point because no one has any expectations of us. So this newest one is going to be a all Australian New Zealand hopped. New England IPA of sorts, so it should be interesting.
So, what makes the Australian hops a bit different then?
They have a very unique flavor that it's hard to kind of describe. But if you've had any of them, like Galaxy is a very popular one.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it's actually really hard to.
I guess I'm not a hop expert, so I'm like Gordy. I'm on the other side. I drink everything, but I'm more on the other side. So.
Yeah, so you know, it's just going to be an experiment, and we'll see how it comes out. This is one I'm going straight to production with, never having done it before. So it'll be interesting, but I know it won't be bad.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing these three. These have all been great. What a great way to break up my day. Doctor's appointment this morning. No, what did I have? I had physical therapy this morning. Went to the gym. Now I'm here drinking beer during the day with you guys. Yes, it's probably snowing outside. So that is pure Michigan at its best there, isn't it?
Isn't that the truth?
Right? Isn't that funny? Well, that about does it. It's so easy to talk for an hour here.
About
so,
beer?
Yeah. and I'm not sure I've had some like brand new brewery owners on a while, so it was refreshing to kind of have that conversation again. And I enjoyed getting to talk to both of you guys, and I look forward to coming back to the brewery and eventually coming in for a bus tour and doing fun stuff like that, working some way or another for sure. So if folks want to get more information about Cadillac Straits Brewing Company in Madison Heights, where should they go?
www.cadillacstraits.com or check us out on Facebook, Instagram.
Even Twitter.
Are we on Twitter?
Yeah, we are on Twitter.
You are on Twitter.
I don't do Twitter.
You're not tweeting? You're not tweeting? Well, I have to know this, and I follow you on all those properties, so that's why I know it, right?
Yep.
So thank you for coming on. Folks, please come out to the brewery and check them out. Next month on my podcast, I'm going to have – I don't remember. So I just realized as I was saying that out loud that I don't remember who I have on next month. But I definitely have a guest coming on in December. And it'll come to me as I'm driving home later. So stay tuned for that episode. But I want to thank you guys for coming in.
Thank you.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
Yep. Thanks for having us.